Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are in Constitution Week, and for us, we're okay with taking it to Constitution Month because it's all about the Constitution. We've kind of already gone over a couple of the things that the government is violating the Constitution on, but there's plenty more to go over. Now, one of the things that we just covered is that each house is to keep a journal of its proceedings from time to time and to publish the same, except those parts that may be requiring secrecy. Now, I believe that that right there needs to be amended. I believe that the states need to say, you know what? Even your secret, even everything you do in secret needs to be documented so that we can still see it, because the states have oversight over the federal government. And so the problem is that a long time ago, they didn't have such a massive apparatus of intelligence and secrecy. What we're doing is we're giving the states the ability to actually go in and read these journals, have access to these, because they have secure comms. They should be able to go in and see what they're doing behind the scenes and why are they doing it behind the scenes. Because I've said this before, there are only specific reasons why something would be classified. If you don't put alcohol in a safe because you think it's classified, that is a misuse of a safe. Alcohol isn't classified. And the only reason people do that is to hide it from everybody else, that that's something that they're probably consuming at work. Believe me, the OpNav instructions covered this when I was setting up my first skiff. They made sure you knew what was to go in those containers and what wasn't to go in those containers. You weren't to use those things to hide things from others. And that's what we have in government. They're doing a lot of things that they're hiding, but they're using secrecy to protect it, when that is abuse of the purposes of classifications. So anyway, what we want to do is we want to kind of really, really, really quickly go through the obligatory so we can get back into the second iteration or part two of the Constitution. And we're still in Section 1, so as you know, this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence that proves to you how we got here and the academic evidence-based solutions of what we need to do to get back. We support and we ask you to consider, if you're looking for furnishings, go to Timber Nation. Take a look at what these guys offer. They offer a lot of different types of obscure things, from record case holders or bookcases and or cabinets and or racks for audio equipment. They do a lot, desks and so forth. Look at the quality. You're talking about 2-inch solid pieces of oak or walnut. You can't get that quality. You could go down to your local furniture store and see if you can get that kind of quality. Solid oak, solid walnut, solid maple, solid cherry, solid hard wood. Radio Dust Covers, www.radiodustcovers.com. And if you're looking for ISP services, somebody to help you with your domain, or just email services, add local. Red Pill Expo is coming up, and I need to send emails out to the distributor. I'll do it, but 9 times out of 10, most all the legislators will ignore me. But if you actually reach out to your legislators and say, hey, go here, you can get a free ticket if you can attend. If you can't attend, then there's no reason why you can't stream. What you should be asking them and actually informing them, I'd like to see your attendance there, and I'm going to be checking to see if you did attend. Because I know you're coming up for re-election next year, because every House representative is up for election every 2 years. So you should be asking them, why didn't you go? Why are you not attending this? You claim to be a constitutional conservative, air quotes applied. Well, then where is the evidence of this? Because you're not attending these meetings, and I'm just not seeing it. you need to start challenging these folks, and we want to really push this issue with you. So we're here to help. Let us know how, and we will be happy to help. Another thing that we want to do is we really want to start helping you understand the education behind and the history behind the petition. If you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, the petition page, you will find at the very bottom is a document Bob Schultz wrote regarding the history of First Amendment petitions. This is a really nice document, and it proves to you that the intent behind this petition was that we would have an opportunity to challenge government for violating their constitution, violating those things that constrain them. And if they don't fix it, then we have the ability to withhold our taxes. Now, how many red-blooded Americans out there do you think would want to actually and demand that the federal government not do this, a lot of the things that it's doing and spending your tax money? See, some people have this balanced budget amendment. You want to actually balance the budget, or at least get the federal government only spending money on what they're legally able to spend. Petition them and then demand that you get your tax money, because you get enough people involved in this, there's a lawyer that's going to take this for a little bit of a sum. And 9 times out of 10, in these types of cases, the lawyer actually can walk away with a settlement on top of what everybody else is going to get back. Because when the government is wrong, or the person you're suing is wrong, sometimes you can get the court to actually pay for your legal fees. And as far as I'm concerned, if you understand how much money your state is going to start losing because they're not in compliance with the Constitution, if you've got a decent court in your state, you've got a decent judge that will uphold the Constitution, then this is the way to go. I mean, this is a huge way to go, because you can really hurt the state. Well, just imagine, all of a sudden they can't tax the people anymore. The federal government can't draw on that taxes either. Because when the judge says you have petitioned government for the redress of grievances, they have failed to fix the wrong, and because they failed to fix the wrong, you get to keep your taxes from all government. Anyway, and we'll let that all get sorted out in the courts. But most importantly, the intent is to actually get them, as nice as it would be to not have to pay taxes, we do have to pay taxes, but we do not have to pay taxes for things that they don't have any authority to pay for. If you understand what I'm saying, the federal government has no money to spend on environmental programs. They have no money to spend on central disease control. All these things that they're using as tyrannical vestiges to, you know, attack us with, these appendages that they've created that have gone down these unconstitutional departments, the Department of Health and Human Services, so forth and so on. All of these things are unconstitutional, and that means that they don't have any authority to spend money on them, which means that all the money that they're spending and taking debt to spend that money is all fraudulent. So we got to get Republic Review moving forward, because we need to start telling China and a lot of people who are working to undermine the United States, like the Federal Reserve and every other bank out there that is trying to get the federal government and the United States government into a position where they can bamboozle America into saying, hey, we're going to have to default on all of this debt, all of this felonious debt that we've created. And now you don't have a government anymore, and we're basically seizing you. That's what they're trying to do, and they don't have the legal standing to do it. So wake up, America. Wake up. Anyway, let's move forward. We've got about 2 minutes, and so we're in Section 1 still, and it's actually Subsection 5, and it's the very last paragraph of Section 5. Neither House during the session of Congress shall, without the consent of the other, adjourn for more than 3 days, nor at any other place than nor to any other place than that in which the two houses shall be sitting. Now we go to Section 6. Section 6, the senators and representatives shall receive a compensation for their services to ascertain by law and paid out by the Treasury of the United States. They shall in all cases except treason, felony, and breach of the peace be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session of their respective houses and in going to and returning from the same. And for any speech or debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place. And so, except for treason, felony, and breach of the peace, be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session. So if you understand what that is and what that just says, what that means is that they're above the law, except if you charge them of treason. Now, when we talk about Republic Review, because we went down this path, if you have to, because they refuse to do their job, they refuse to support their oath of office, states have the power, and we'll get to this in Article 4, to charge their representatives with treason, and by extraditing them, they can actually then try them for treason, and at a minimum, at least nail them for violating Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. So with that, we'll be right back after these two promos, and we'll continue on regarding Section 6. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic Review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so with the last part of Section 6, no senator or representative shall, during the time for which he is elected, or she, be appointed to any civil office under the authority of the United States, which shall have been created, or the emoluments whereof shall have been increased during such time, and no person holding any office under the United States shall be a member of either house during his continuance in office. So what that means is when a brand new constitutional entity is created, let's say Space Force is constitutional.
let's say, because actually, the Space Force should actually be a part of the Department of Navy, right? Because the Department of Navy and the Marine Corps are the only constitutional departments that actually have a role in going abroad outside the waters and in this particular space, because we've gotten into airspace. They should be the ones that maintain a presence abroad over water and air, because it is the area outside the United States. The only reason we have an army is, and the only reason that they created an Air Force is for projection of service and or presence. So they use the army to put in Germany and in, you know, Korea and these different places around the world, Spain. But the Constitution doesn't allow that. It's only for war. And they're to be limited to two-year budgets for the army to be actually in existence. And the army, for it to actually be constitutional, needs to be federalized out of the militia. So in other words, the whole seed to, you know, our defense is the militia, other than the Navy. We're to have and to operate and maintain a Navy and Marine Corps. So if you understand what I'm saying, then when Trump created this role of maintaining control, military control in space, that should have gone to the Navy to create independent ports for like the International Space Station, to create a port for Navy aircraft and spacecraft to go dock to. Because, I mean, when you look at, and I know it's science fiction, but there's something to be said when you have USS Enterprise, Starship, just like a battleship, just like the Navy. The Navy is a constitutional entity that has a responsibility of being a force projection as well as maintaining peace. Yeah, we play traffic cop around the world, and I've said this for years, that we should actually, you know, charge the world for the cost of doing that, because it's just, you know, if they want to trust China to be able to do that, because China's out there being aggressive, trying to take things. And I'm here to tell you that the world, the only countries that would sign up to China is because China already has a presence with a gun to their head. There's nobody in their rational mind would say, you know, having China as the world cop would be the best thing to do. And if you hadn't heard, China is already trying to increase its role in the United Nations as a peacekeeping force. Replacing the United States as a peacekeeper. I'm telling you, the United Nations should be kicked off of American soil. We should have nothing to do with it because we have no constitutional standing. There's no power granted to the federal government to create that type of relationship. They can create emissaries and they can create ambassadors and have an ambassadorial relationship with an organization, but not to create treaties and agreements. We don't have that power. They don't have that power to actually allow us to subjugate to another international government. Because remember, if it's not within their enumerated powers, they can't do it. Anyway, moving forward, no senator or representative shall during the time of peace, which was elected. Okay, we just actually covered this. So now we're at Section 7. All bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives. This is not happening. There are plenty of times where bills that are raising revenue are originating outside of the House of Representatives. And so, as we see the Senate doing this, and even the executive, Obama has done this. I believe his grab with Common Core, he did that outside the House of Representatives. And so he was the one that actually then, you know, was start paying a third-party entity and using taxes to do that. But the Senate may propose or concur with amendments as on other bills. Every bill which shall have passed the House of Representatives and the Senate shall, before it become a law, be presented to the President of the United States. If he, and they're not talking about the specific parameters of what 50% plus one or what have you. But that's usually what's applied. Now, the Senate has certain rules, like a 60% threshold or what have you. That's what they used to use for Supreme Court and other appointments. But they have watered that down. And I told you, we will rue the day that they're doing that. Anyway, if he approve, he shall sign it. But if not, he shall return it with his objections to that house in which it shall have originated, who shall enter the objections at large on their journal and proceed to reconsider it. If, after such reconsideration, two-thirds of that house shall agree to pass the bill, it shall be sent together with the objections to the other house, by which it shall likewise be reconsidered. And if by two-thirds of that house it shall become a bill, but in all such cases, the votes of both houses shall be determined by yeas and nays, and the names of the persons voting for and against the bill shall be entered on the journal of each house, respectively. If any bill shall not be returned to the president within 10 days, Sundays excepted, after it shall have been presented to him, the same bill shall be law, in like manner as if he had signed it, unless the Congress by their adjournment prevent its return, in which case it shall not be law. So in other words, it basically states that they're going to create a bill, and it requires just a majority of both houses to pass it. And if the president vetoes it, then it has to pass the two-thirds thresholds of both houses. Then they can send it over. And if the president chooses not to sign it, it becomes law within 10 days, period. Now, if he signs it and tries to send it back and they're not in session, then that 10 days, it doesn't become law. Then Congress still has to receive it when they come back in session. Anyway, every order, resolution, or vote to which the concurrence of the Senate and House of Representatives may be necessary, except on a question of adjournment, shall be presented to the President of the United States, and before the same shall take effect, shall be approved by him, or being disapproved by him, shall be repassed by two-thirds of the Senate and the House of Representatives according to the rules and limitations prescribed in the case of a bill. So in other words, the President can actually tell Congress that they have to stick around, but Congress, if they got two-thirds of both houses, they're taking a break. They're going on vacation. Section 8. Now, Section 8 is interesting because this is one of the only sections in any of the articles that has a preamble to it. Now, what is a preamble? I've said this before. A preamble is a forerunning declaration that provides insights as to what the following information is to be provided for. In other words, it's kind of like a preface to a book. A preamble kind of just says, hey, we're going to be giving you some information that follows this, and the reason why we're doing it is for this purpose. Okay? So this is how Section 8's preamble goes. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and to provide for, so this is why they're collecting taxes, to provide for the common defense and the general welfare. Now, when they say general welfare, that doesn't mean the welfare of all, the welfare of individuals, or anything like that. The overall benefit of the United States, not in a financial benefit, but, you know, in a general sense. Sorry. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. Now, when you start looking at what that last line was, that was a clause that basically is what we call the uniformity clause. Because regardless of what Congress does and how they interact from one state to the next, they must do it uniformly. They cannot create a burden on a bunch of states and then relieve that burden by giving and granting something to another state. I'll give you a case example. The TARP fund bailout. When Congress voted to bail out the TARP fund, Where'd that money go? That all went into New York State. Now, that created a $2 trillion debt, or two and a half, or whatever. Well, who had to carry that? All the states had to carry that. But that $2.5 trillion that went into New York kind of negated their apportionment for that. In other words, the uniformity has to be applied not in just how they tax, but how they benefit states as well. They cannot, you know, first off, it was unconstitutional that they gave that benefit. But secondly, the fact is that they did it, and they didn't do it to all other states. Let's say it was a constitutional benefit. They can't just do it to New York. They have to do it to all the states, period. It's the uniformity clause. They must be uniform in how they interact and treat all of the states, whether it be taxes or benefits. Anyway, we'll be right back with the actual powers.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the powers that they're basically going to... Wow, that was close. The powers that they are going to delegate basically lay out the powers of the federal government and their jurisdiction. So the first one that they list out... And what you have to remember is that the very first part of Section 8, the Congress shall have the power to dot, 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 because the preamble basically ties that to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, but all duties, imposts, excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. And then they list these powers. So here is the first power enumerated, and this is subsection 1, to borrow money on the credit of the United States. Okay, so they have the ability to borrow money. Well, everybody thinks that, wow, they have this unlimited ability to borrow money. There's no constraints there, right? No. Remember what we read in the ratification debates. Because if you borrow money, how do you borrow money? Somebody just bequeaths you money and says, you know, I'll try to pay you back. No. When you borrow money, you sign a contract, right? Well, what's a contract? A contract's the same thing as a treaty. It's a subcontract that you create that obliges you in receiving this money that you have to pay this back. And here are the interest rates and everything else that they put within this contract. George Nicholas, when it was brought up that the federal government could just create these treaties, these types of contracts with, you know, that could destroy us. And he says, this is what George Nicholas says, and I'm reading this so you completely understand the limitations of the federal government are all constrained within enumerated powers. We have an enumerated constitution, not a general constitution. In other words, these are not general powers they're listing. This is an enumerated power. They have the power to you know, create debt, to go into debt. The worthy member says that they can make a treaty relinquishing our rights. In other words, they can create so much debt that over time, if we can't pay the debt, we would lose our rights, lose our nation, and be foreclosed on. And inflicting punishments, because all treaties are declared paramount to the constitutions and laws of the states. An attentive consideration of this will show the committee that they can do no such thing. The provision of the sixth article is that this constitution and the laws of the United States, which will be made in pursuance thereof, and all the treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. They can by this make no treaty which shall be repugnant to the spirit of the Constitution or inconsistent with the delegated powers. In other words, if they're making a treaty to spend money and they're doing this to aggrandize themselves, because that's what they've been doing since Andrew Jackson, in funneling money out to these spoil systems so that money could be used to keeping them in office, re-electing them and what have you. Just so you understand, they do not and cannot go into treaties to borrow money. Anybody that is lending the United States money to be spent on things that we have no enumerated power or delegated power to do, such as social engineering, Common Core, critical race theory, or even vaccinations and or the fighting of COVID. All of these things are not enumerated powers. All the social engineering, the Amtrak, you know, floating Amtrak for all of these years, floating the NPR. Those things are not enumerated within the Constitution, period. And because they're not enumerated within the Constitution, they can't create debt for it, nor can they spend a penny on it, because it is not within their jurisdiction to do so. Okay, so just want to be clear. Now, keep that in mind as we go through the rest of these powers. To regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and within the tribes. Now, what are they saying, regulate commerce with foreign nations? Does that mean... Because it points to this concept of regulating commerce with foreign nations. So if we look at how they regulate commerce, they're dictating, you know, how much a toilet can flow and all of, you know, a light bulbs, filaments, and they're creating all of these standards of production. That's not anywhere here where they have the ability to create standards for production. They're to regulate the commerce with foreign nations and among the several states. In other words, they're to deal with and make sure that the trade between the foreign nations doesn't create a conflict between the trade we're doing with Indian tribes as well as with the several states. To ensure that we're not bringing in goods to underprice or undermine a market in a different state. To understand this line and to look at what happened with the South when they started creating the abominable tariffs that actually hurt the South, they violated this part of the Constitution because the federal government was creating tariffs to hurt the South because of their slavery. And that was a violation of the Constitution. Now, when the South seceded, they did so constitutionally. They had the authority and the power to do that. Okay, so, but they don't have the authority to dictate how you can make. Nowhere in here does it say to regulate. And actually, the usage of the word regulate here, in by definition at the time, was to put in good order. regulate the concept of regulating like an engine and regulating the management down to the minutia of things did not, that application for that word didn't come until much later when we started using regulators for engines, when we started utilizing this word regulate in so many other different ways. And so, to be clear, they do not have the authority to regulate the what is being done and whether it's harmful or not. That really goes between the states, and that's an issue between the states. Now, the next one, which is the third power, to establish a uniform rule of naturalization. In other words, to establish a standard rule, a uniform rule. In other words, it gives everybody the same equal chance of coming here as an immigrant. However, when they start creating rules like DACA, then that violates the uniform rule standard of naturalization because it gives a preference to one class or group of people over another. And that is a violation of the Constitution. So there's a reason why that is red, because they do not have the authority or the power to provide preferences to different demographics. And uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. Now, there's a good gentleman that I was going to talk to regarding bankruptcies because they do not have a uniform rule. They have created a protection for the credit that they have extended or the loaning of money that they have given for student loans. Student loans, if a person has a student loan and they can't pay it, they can't go through bankruptcy. In other words, every loan that you take, you can actually go through bankruptcy, and it's on the court. In other words, when I just said, and uniform laws on the subjects of bankruptcies throughout the United States, well, the federal government has said, well, you can't go bankrupt on our loans, on these loans that we're protecting. How else did you think that they got these banks to come in and take these terrible risks on these flighty, you know, dithead kids? I mean, any kid that wants to go become a director of YouTube, I mean, come on, that's not a career. What's the demand out there? There's many kids that have an education where there's zero demand. And who are the benefits for this? Well, the education system and the loans, the companies that were providing the loans to let these kids go to school. So, as far as I'm concerned, whatever the standards are for bankruptcy, you cannot create this class protection because it's the federal government sanctioning this. It's kind of like protecting the vaccination companies from you being able to sue them for not going through the processes. They can't do that either. And so, but they did. They can't lie, but they get away with lying all the time. They promised me and everybody that joined the military in the 60s and 70s and 80s health care and dental care for life. I don't get any dental care, and I have to pay out of my pocket for health care. Where they have lied to veterans. You want to thank veterans on some holiday, Veterans Day or whatever. You want to recognize veterans, do something instead of just having them stand up like monkeys. Prove that you really care and start getting the government to honor its commitments in what it made to these veterans when they joined the military and they did everything that they were asked to have, you know, free health care and dental care for the rest of their lives. Because we don't have that. They promised it to us, and we don't have it. Just saying. Anyway, to coin money. So, to be clear, they violate the Commerce Clause, which is what I just read before regarding deregulated commerce. And they also violate this uniform rule of naturalization, as well as they violate the bankruptcy laws. So we will be back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as you know, this is the last segment, so we'll kind of continue going through these enumerated powers, but the next one up is to coin money. Now, I want you to understand what that just said. To coin money. Not to print money. To coin money. They have the power to create coins and regulate the value thereof. That's it. And this is a big violation because they started creating paper currency and fiat. Now, so what they did a long time ago is they started creating money and they said, hold on, you can't print paper. Well, what we're doing is we're creating certificates. In other words, instead of you carrying a bunch of coin in your pocket, we're tying the silver and or gold to these certificates so that this can, you can take this certificate down to a federal bank and exchange that for silver or gold. Okay. All right. Because it was just unreasonable with the cost of things going up and up and up for you to carry that kind of money to make that kind of purchase. Now, this is long before, you know, checks and, you know, people were able to write and have checking accounts and so forth. But bottom line, there is nowhere in the Constitution that the federal government has the power to just create paper currency. It has to be, and they justified it by saying that every print of every dollar that they printed, or $50, $20, what have you, was tied to some form of metal. Some form of coin. And so, okay, we allowed that to happen. But see, what happens is all of a sudden people forget and they started realizing that everybody just kept with these pieces of paper. Nobody was really going in and cashing these in. So they just kept it up and they kept doing it. And people forgot that these things had a tie to gold and or silver. And so when they decided to get off of that tie and break the model of going into coin or having these certificates and just making these things fiat currency, then all of a sudden we see how the federal government had abandoned and completely walked away from any constitutionality of how they're managing our currency. They have to coin, and of foreign coin. So they have the power to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and of foreign coin, and fix the standards of weights and measures. Next one, to provide, this is the next power, Congress shall have the power to provide for the punishment of counterfeiting the securities and current coin. You see, they didn't say money, bills, cash, coin of the United States. The next one, and this is kind of interesting because most people, you know, get this wrong. Congress shall have the power to establish post offices and post roads. Now, when somebody establishes a post office, is the post office to be operated and maintained by the federal government, or just because it says to establish? And for the most part, that's what they did. They established it and then maintained it. But it doesn't say that. And when you go through the ratification debates, this is one of those that didn't get debated that well. But the question is, should the states have some responsibility in maintaining the post office, or is it strictly a federal role and responsibility? Because that's how they did it going out the gate. They just maintained that. But the post roads, what the heck is a post road? And I'm telling you right now, it has nothing to do with the post office and the running of the mail. A post road is a road that takes you from your state capital to the national capital. In other words, they were to establish a road to make sure that your state capital was connected to the national capital. They didn't have airplanes back then, so the mode of travel was typically going to be by horse, buggy, or what have you. And so these roadways and highways were starting to get created and improved upon and so forth. And so the only roads that the federal government has responsibility for are post roads, the roads that connect the capitals to the state or the national government. Here's an interesting one. To promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. The whole point was limited times. And now they're allowing these companies to bilk and actually hurt the people, because if you can't create a competitive product with software, and I'm telling you, if you look at software, all software is a copy of another software or what have you. I see it all the time, where somebody takes a shell of a software that kind of does something and they want to modify it. And then they go in and they modify that to do something more, interfacing with the database, or they add these features to it. Well, is that original software from the ground up? No, it's not. Very rarely do they create from the ground up software. And as a matter of fact, it's very rarely do they create a new language and interpretations for the shell to actually interface with APDs and so forth. All of these technicalities that get into software, very rarely do they ever create their own language and do everything from scratch. Never. I've never seen it. 9 times out of 10, they actually just, you know, build something that they've used in Unix and they've applied it to Red Hat or to some flavor of Linux or Windows to, you know, trying to force, you know, Windows into Apple. You know, oh, well, they use these translators or they use these interfaces that allow Apple to run Windows applications and vice versa, DOS or Windows to run Apple. The whole point is that, you know, we're going way too far in protecting companies that are not creating original discoveries. You know, it's the same thing with storage. SCSI commands were the initial, and, you know, had we locked down SCSI commands so nobody could have used it, then they would not have been able to translate SCSI over network, SCSI over fiber channel, SCSI, all these different SCSI commands over these different new mediums of communicating. Well, that's a good thing. In other words, what we want is we want them to continue to innovate and make these things available. And by giving these long-term patents and protections, these software companies, when you sign this software agreement, it's like it's legal. It doesn't have the legality, because a lot of things that these software companies are doing is actually taking away your rights. This is why we actually need states to stand up and say, you cannot use a software agreement to take away the rights of our individuals. These are inalienable rights. You have no protection in this country by taking away, by extrapolating a person's information, their name, and all this other data that you can get via their interfacing with you and share that with somebody else. That would be violating their fundamental constitutional rights. And so this is why we need a bill of rights for the 21st century. This is why we need to get everybody to start promoting this concept for a 2022 campaign. This is what we're doing, and we want to get more people educated on this. And this is a great point to plug that at this point in time. Now, the next thing that they have is a power. This is a power to constitute tribunal inferiors to the Supreme Court. In other words, to create courts or tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. Why? Because this is the appeals process, so that the Supreme Court doesn't necessarily have to hear everything, that these inferior courts could probably solve most of the problems. This is what was done in the Bible. When Moses set up judges, when he set up these tiers of judges, very few things bubbled up to him or to the supreme judges of the land of Israel. It was all done at a lower level, because judges, they didn't have states and federal. It was all basically a theocratic judicial system that goes all the way down into the small knits of communities, families, and so forth. So anyway, the next one. To define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the laws of nations. Now, let me ask you this. You already know that it's a federal crime to kidnap somebody and take them across state lines. Have we crossed that yet? No. And as a matter of fact, you're not going to find that law or that power given to the federal government to be able to define and punish the laws of being able for people to do that. So far, the only thing that they've covered for crimes and punishments was to provide for the punishment of counterfeiting the securities and coin of the United States, and now to provide and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the laws of nations. Now, just to be clear, that's fundamentally three laws that they have jurisdiction over. We'll also find out later that they have the power to punish people for treason as well. So they basically have only four laws that they can define and punish people over. You're not going to find any of these other drug laws, kidnapping, trafficking, any of these laws. It's RICO laws. All of these things they've made for themselves to justify their standing army. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help, and we'll be back with more enumerated powers in our next episode.
Case after case, and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.